And we're back on the rule of three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking about the hit FX show Baskets later in the episode. Brian has just celebrated his 20th anniversary of doing movie reviews.
I didn't even get myself anything.
The fact that you didn't have to watch a movie to write this week's review is probably an unimaginable present, considering some of the tripe that's out this week.
That saved me from Beauty and the Beast.
But I think the number one issue on everybody's mind is the failure to get Donald Trump's health care plan through the Congress, which is just the first step. I mean, if he actually got Congress to vote on it and pass it, it still would have to go to the Senate. And it's, you know, it's rinse, repeat. It's rinse, repribus, perhaps.
Rinse, repeat. He has to have run some election at some point with that headline or that campaign slogan, right? Rinse, repeat.
I do not know. It's I have often wondered whether or not his parents, when they were picking names, one of them was looking at a shampoo bottle after eating some kind of a brownie.
That's an interesting point, because everyone's talking the focus was so much on the House vote that I think I bet if you polled people, I bet you 30% of people at least would think this was like pass or fail all in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it has to be pitched that way. But, you know, it was only the 50% mark. It was only the halfway point. And the Senate, you know, the Senate is notoriously worse. The Senate is the stodgy part of the legislature.
They're kind of built to be that way, in a way, right?
Oh gosh, yeah. That's why they weren't supposed to be elected. It's why they were supposed to be appointed positions, was to even make them stodgier. And they're there for 6 years, whereas the House of Representatives, it changes as quickly as public opinion. I mean, it's every 2 years, so that way it truly reflects where the public opinion is at that point. Whereas the Senate is supposed to be, you know, the consistent, it's supposed to be the conservative chamber.
So yeah, if you have two terms, you become institutional memory pretty fast.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, what happened was the ultimate failure was the conservative wing of the Republican House decided that no, we did not. We did not get sent here for repeal and replace. We just got sent here for repeal. So, and it wasn't really even a replace when you come down to it. It was just kind of a little bit of tweak here and there to perhaps make it solvent.
Which is funny because Democrats wanted to do the same thing.
Right, but not with Trump.
Of course not. No, well, they weren't even consulted. I mean, literally, Trump didn't ask the Democrats to participate in this process at all. I think he thought he could just get it through. But, I mean, that's what's interesting is that, I mean, now, I'm not saying the Democrats want to make the same changes as the Republicans, but everybody agrees changes need to be made. And as usual with Trump, the inarticulation or the broad articulation of the pitch sort of overshadowed the reality, which was, we'll get rid of it, when in reality was, we'll work on it.
Yeah, it's that's a really interesting point that you're bringing up, and that I've noticed this several times through the Trump presidency, is that his policy doesn't always match the promise. It doesn't always match what he puts out on Twitter or what he ran on. Yet it's still opposed by those are the means that it's opposed by, is that I think if a lot of people who are in favor of continuing and repairing Obamacare actually looked at what he was proposing, they might have said, this is probably a good thing.
Oh, this is a bad bill. This was a bad bill. Oh, it was the CBO score on this thing was an atrocity. I mean, Andrew Lee and I were talking about that on the radio. We were just slapping our foreheads just talking about what an atrocity of a – it was a hodgepodge. You know, it was trying to please a bunch of different factions.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, I'm not saying. I do think there should be changes made for sure. And I, you know, anyway, this, here's another slight distraction, but I don't want to forget this before I forget about it. David Frum, who's become a very interesting kind of. He's like a little out on an island intellectually, you know. Kind of, he's an intellectual hermit now, sitting out talking to his old friends. David Frum made an interesting point that he said, "I don't think healthcare is a human right, but in a wealthy democracy, it's a travesty not to have it." And that was the point he'd kind of settled on. Frum being, of course, a Bush 2 staffer.
Sure. Sure.
And I thought that was an interesting perspective.
A compassionate conservative.
Yeah, Frum's a smart guy. Frum and Mike Murphy are both, I think, genuine intellectuals. I like both of those guys. Murphy's funnier.
But I don't you see, I don't think anyone disagrees that we should not take care of the sick. I think
some people do. I think some of those Freedom Caucus people genuinely do.
No, not at all. No, they just don't think it's a function of the federal government. And it truly isn't. I mean, even if you look at Europe, where it's the model that everyone says we should compare ourselves to, there is no country in Europe as big as the United States. And in fact, most of Europe is composed of countries about the size of our states.
This is true.
And that's part of the problem is that each of those countries has a different culture and a different type of people, different way of looking at things, different work ethic. They're all different. Much like here in the United States, all our states kind of have different personalities ascribed to each one. I would imagine a very talented comedian could do an impression of could do 50 impressions of a person from any state. I could probably do 5 or 6.
Sure.
And it's most comics they do Larry the Cable Guy for all the red states. That's the extent of it. However, I mean that's really what necessarily needs to be done is that each state has to worry about health care. It's not a function of federal government. It just gets too unmanageable. It's too huge. It's impossible for the federal government to do it.
Okay. I'm not necessarily opposed to that. I don't necessarily disagree with that. Here's a question for you. Would you be okay with some sort of very broad overarching federal regulations that just ensure that the states stay within a few guidelines, such as, for instance, no pre-existing conditions?
Well,
stuff
you
like
see,
that.
That's the thing. That's the one I was going to go to next, strangely enough, is that once you allow pre-existing conditions, it's no longer insurance. I mean, you can't sign up for fire insurance after the fire truck leaves. You can't sign up for life insurance after dad dies. Pre-existing conditions are 180 degrees from the notion of quote unquote insurance. And that right there is the crux of the problem. That's why Obamacare and Trump Care both were destined to fail. Is you can't do that. You can't, because people aren't going to sign up for insurance until they have a condition. It's why would you make premium payments if you can get insurance after the fire?
Well, for one thing, if you have no insurance and then you say, in my case, I had an emergency appendectomy. Luckily, I had health insurance. It would have cost me $27,000 if I did not have insurance. I mean, you can't. I wouldn't have been covered if I signed up the next day for the surgery I'd had the previous day.
No, that's true. That's true. But there are a few emergent conditions.
Car accident, trip, even breaking your leg.
Car accident, you're covered.
Are you?
Yeah, you are.
By your auto insurance?
Uh-huh.
Oh, did not know that. Luckily, yep. Never been in a car accident. But yep. Here's
that's one of the most hack. I shouldn't say that.
Oh yeah, no, I know the joke you're talking about.
Joke is that, if I get in an accident, if I get sick, I get in my car and ride it into a tree.
Yep, I've definitely heard that a few times. But then the problem is you get somebody who has, say, migraine headaches and can't get any health insurance because the insurance starts using minor pre-existing conditions as an excuse to purge people from the rolls.
I don't know that they do that. It's my understanding that pre-existing conditions mean that if you have migraine headaches before you sign up for insurance, you can't get treatment for migraine
headaches.
Well,
not to get heavy
covered.
At the end of the segment, but there is some belief in my family that my grandfather killed himself because he knew that the insurance had purged him from the rolls because he'd had two heart surgeries and he was unable to get any form of health insurance and he believed himself to be getting sicker and that he knew that if he stuck around that that he would bankrupt the family business. So
great. You bring up the good story right at the end.
So I'm just telling you, pre-existing conditions as a way of purging people from insurance is definitively a real thing. And on the final segment of Rule of Three, we're going to talk about... Boy, this is a weird transition if you just heard the last segment straight into this. I just thought about that. Very chipper. True story.
Yeah.
On a different topic. We're going to be talking about Baskets, the TV show, in particular because Tim and I are next week at Crash and Burn going to work with one of the stars of Baskets. So we both decided we'd watch a little bit of it before we met...
The star of Baskets. I think everyone else is just a supporting character. I think she's the star.
She actually is the second star, I would say. She's fantastic. But that's a story for another segment about 9 minutes from now. But before that, speaking of movies, it turns out this year, I didn't even realize it until I did the math, I will begin my 20th year of writing movie reviews for the newspaper Nightlife in Carbondale, which is kind of a long time.
That's a generation. There are probably kids reading your reviews that to them you've been there their entire life.
Gosh, I hadn't thought about that. Or theoretically, you could have knocked your college girlfriend up freshman year, and then your kid could go to that school, and you both could have read my reviews as freshmen.
Wow.
Oh boy, now I feel old. It was on the 27th anniversary of the whole paper, and so they asked me to do a little
retrospective. Which is weird too, is that you have been there for more than two-thirds of the paper's existence.
Yes, and the paper started by two guys who still own it and run it together to this day, Chris Wissman and Jay Thomas. It's truly one of the last relatively few independent alt weeklies published, I would say, in the whole country.
I always called them left wing rags.
Oh, it's definitely super lefty. Oh, absolutely. The alt weekly.
That's what I've always referred to them as. And I'm sorry if you gentlemen are listening. That's just my bias. I don't really mean it as derogatorily as it sounds because I read them too. It's one of the few that have been able to survive in the absence of prostitution ads.
Oh, absolutely. That's the big moneymaker for alt weeklies, which if people don't remember, alt weeklies were really big in the 90s. Kind of grunge culture, alt weeklies, it was all kind of interconnected. It was basically people realized, some savvy guys realized, hey, the regular newspapers won't take, it's like strip club ads and certainly not escort services and anything potentially prostitution. And they're like, we could just do that. We could just take all that money. But then, of course, we need some content. Well, okay, we'll get some kids to write about records and movies and stuff. And then they start to get a political bent to them. You know, I think some of them were founded very ideological.
It was essentially the same dichotomy that existed in Playboy magazine, where they had intellectual articles in order to make the magazine seem legitimate. Is that only the difference with the alt weekly is the intellectual articles is what sold the magazine, and the other side was that what kept it afloat.
Right, but I always wonder. I bet you it's about 50-50 the number of papers that were started with a great ideological reason and okay, we'll take that strip club money versus we need that strip club money. Hey, find me some hippie who can type some stuff, you know. But but it's a great paper, and and in fact the editor Chris Wisman, one of my longtime mentors, actually cut his hair, became the establishment, and became a city councilman for a number of years while still owning the paper, and has since retired from that.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a great dude, and he was a darn good city councilman too. But anyway, so they asked me to do a little retrospective thing for the anniversary issue and my 20-year thing. So I came up with a list of the 27 best movies you might have missed from the past 27 years. And this took me a while. It took me several hours because I wanted to find movies not just that were great. Every one of them had to be great. But I wanted it to be movies people really haven't seen. I didn't want to just go like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas or something, you know, mildly odd, but prevalent. And what's been interesting is I'll post the list on my Facebook and a link to it on my Twitter if anybody wants to go look at it. Everybody I've shown so far has seen a couple of three of them at best. You said you'd seen a couple, right?
I think I counted four. There's a couple I know I wanted to see. I don't remember if I actually saw them.
Sure. So you saw what you said, Fisher King. From 1991.
Yeah, I saw the first three. I saw Fisher King.
Yep.
I saw Shakes the Clown. I saw Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
Loved all three. I saw The Wild Parrots of Telegraph Hill.
Very nice little documentary.
And I can't remember if I saw Bubba Hotep.
Oh, that's a great one. That is up your alley. That's the...
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember if that was one that I actually watched or... always meant to.
I would wager to say if you'd watched it, you would definitely remember. It is a very memorable movie. Written by Joe R. Lansdale, one of the great American pulp writers of the last probably 100 years. Certainly one of the best living pulp writers, who I met in Boise, Idaho, who was just hanging out at a bookstore one time when I was there doing some comedy. So that was weird.
Wow.
But he's great. But the movie, if you haven't seen it, it's from 2003. Bruce Campbell and Ossie Davis play respectively Elvis Presley and John F. Kennedy. Ossie Davis being a black, an older black gentleman does play into that plot line. They are in a nursing home and nobody believes them that they are JFK or Elvis. And they may or may not be, but they must team up to fight a mummy. It is amazing.
I still can't remember if I've seen it or not. Now as you're saying all that, I do remember all that. And like I said, I don't remember if I just read reviews and just said, I got to see this movie. I got to see this movie. Or if I actually saw this movie.
Oh, you should definitely. And Emily, I'll make a couple of recommendations for you. If you can, check some of these out. I think these are right up your alley. Citizen Ruth, Alexander Payne's 1996 comedy about abortion rights that is interestingly up the middle. It is a very dark, ambiguous comedy right before he went on to do like Sideways and Election.
Okay,
that's very good.
And the annoying thing about this, these are 27 movies. I'm gonna have to sign up for Netflix DVD again. I have no idea where you would find these elsewhere.
You could probably buy some of these on Amazon pretty cheap too. You know, $3 online. You know, Amazon DVD and video streaming. The Castle, 1997, really fantastic Australian comedy. About a very quirky little family that lives at the end of a runway of an airport who refuses to sell their house. One of the stranger comedies.
Is that a documentary or is that a...
No, it's a... I think David Thewlis, I believe, is the head of the family. And it sort of seems like they're going to spend the whole time making fun of what seems to be a mildly mentally challenged family. It's very sweet. It's a very thoughtful movie. I really like it a lot. Huh. Definitely up Slagle's alley. This is a big-time Slagle movie. You would love this one. Computer Chess, 2013. This is a movie made about a computer convention in the mid-80s. It is a sort of surrealist fake documentary, and it is shot entirely using cameras from the era.
Oh, wow.
So the whole thing is actually on the sort of 80s video.
Got it.
The aesthetics.
Edited at a cable access station,
yes.
Probably almost.
Yes. And so it's both very cinematic, but also extremely lo-fi, and that adds to the kind of surrealist bent.
It makes it feel like it's a real movie. It makes it feel like it's a real documentary.
Yes, it is. It's tremendous. But I mean, it gets genuinely kind of magical realist. It's very strange. It's fantastic. I think you would like that a lot. And
what was Very Bad Things? That one sounds familiar.
That is a movie I've defended for many years that a lot of people hate. That is a movie where a bunch of bachelors at a bachelor party in Las Vegas accidentally kill a stripper, and in their attempt to hide the body to save the groom, they all devolve into like the worst versions of themselves and go on a killing sprees.
Nope, did not. Thought I did not.
You'll see a movie coming out called Rough Night pretty soon, which is literally about a bunch of women at a bachelorette party killing a male stripper and trying to hide the body. It is Very Bad Things with genders reverse. In fact, I think they should call that movie Very Broad Things. But
well, actually, no, it's Very Bad Things, the politically correct version.
Yeah, and this movie is extremely unpolitically correct.
Because a bachelorette party killing a stripper is, for some reason, is not considered as controversial as a bachelor party killing a stripper.
No, well, probably one's happened a few more times.
Which way? Which one has happened more times?
I feel like the ladies have probably had the worst go of it. I bet the male strippers don't travel with armed escorts, you know.
Have you ever seen what happens to a poor male stripper at a bachelorette party?
I will say this. I would bet you that the male strippers get groped and inappropriately touched way more.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Those guys get lamb. Oh, my. I've heard a friend who did a little of that dancing who was shocked at the groping levels. But
will you add that to the propensity of some bachelorettes to smother a stripper? I would say that your guess that it's been the female stripper is 180 degrees off.
Anyway, and
that's also the second. That's also the second time that I have brought up the degrees metaphor.
Well, you get another chance in the third segment coming up here. That's where we're laying out. But check that list out. I'll put it on Facebook and Twitter. So ever take a gander.
I'll put a link to it on the podcast.
Yeah, and email me. Email me. Drop me a line. Tell me if you've seen them. If you like them. What I left out.
And on the final segment of the Rule of Three, if you're a fan of ours, you probably know that Brian and I will be appearing together next week, starting April 4th at Acme Comedy Company for the 6th edition of the Crash and Burn series. This is a project that I've been working on for 6 years. This is the 6th time I've done it, which is why we call it Crash and Burn 6, I guess. And the idea is that four comics get together and spend a week together writing a show. We start out Tuesday night with material that's never been done on any stage before, 20 minutes each, and we spend the rest of the week together. And even Brian, who actually lives in the city, is not allowed to go home. I got to stress that.
No, I know. I'm going to the hotel.
Okay. No home. You want to talk to your wife's either got to come out and see you, or you got to call her. There's no feeding the kitty. There's no going home to. She's got to know you're on the road. And as stupid as she thinks that is, I think it's crucial.
Yeah, I think you overestimate how much my wife wants me to come home.
Oh man, she's probably already hired the stripper.
I hope he survives.
Pardon?
I hope he survives. out of curiosity, what have you your material written yet? Do you feel like you've got your writing done?
No, not at all. Have I mentioned this before? I don't know if I've mentioned it. Have I done this on the show? Okay, then I'm not going to repeat it. I have been working on it. I think I have a couple concepts that need to be fleshed out that I'm going to try to flesh out more over the next week. Whether or not they're funny, whether or not they go, it doesn't really matter for me as much as it does for you guys. Is because I'm just hosting the show, so I get to bail.
Well, I've probably over prepared with under baked material. That's probably how I would.
Yeah, you seem like that type. And, you know, and me, I'll probably be back for Crash and Burn 7.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So I got another chance to rectify it. There will be, there might actually be an opportunity for me to close the show. I haven't told anybody, but what the heck, I will now.
Ooh.
Is that Thursday night, it will just be us three gentlemen.
Oh, really?
The female component of the show, Martha Kelly, mm-hmm. will be flying to New York because there is an FX party that night that she has to attend. And the reason why she would attend that FX party is because she is the star of the hit FX series Baskets, which is a nice transition.
Yes,
there, huh?
Which I'd been meaning to see for a really long time.
Yeah.
It'd been on my radar for a while. There's so much good TV out, right? You know, it's hard to prioritize sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. But myself, I figured, you know, since I'm going to be working with her all next week, that it was imperative for me to catch a little bit of the show. And fortunately, I don't have to lie to her because I love the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, part of me was like a little nervous because I'm not always on board with Galifianakis. I think he's a very funny guy, and I've really loved some of the stuff he's done. Especially, I think very underrated movie is a Due Date with him and Robert Downey Jr. Just a basic Planes, Trains, and Automobiles riff. Nothing fancy about it. Man, that movie makes me laugh. It's very funny.
Right.
But you know, like, I think Louis's FX show sometimes gets a little ponderous for me. I'm not maybe quite the. It's very good, but I'm not quite the obsessive that some people are. So I thought, is Baskets going to be
too
weird? Well,
this is a Louis C.K. show.
Absolutely, exactly. And so I thought, is this going to be too weird or what? But man, it's very funny. I'm really enjoying it.
It more so than funny, because I've only started on the first season because I had to sign up for Hulu. I didn't have Hulu, so I just had Sling. So I was watching the new season without the first season, and in the second season, I noticed it's not as funny as I expected. It's in the second season they start actually getting into the characters themselves, Is the first season wacky comedy? Because the first episode sure was.
I think they're sort of shifting the whole time. I think they simply start off to, the appeal is the wackier stuff at the beginning, and it seems to be getting more character centric as it goes.
Yeah, it's the characters start to develop, and there's a little bit of pathos involved in the second season that's touching and magnetic. I don't know. To be honest, I saw the pilot, and I don't know if I would have gone on to the if I was just watching it as a civilian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would have gone beyond the pilot. To be honest with you,
I liked the pilot quite a bit. But you're saying that having seen the second season, you're all in because you want to see how
I'm
they get
there.
Oh,
I'm all in. Yeah, yeah. The pilot. The problem with the pilot is when they were first announcing the show and getting people to watch it,
mm-hmm.
they spoiled all the good gags.
That's true. Comedy pilots are tough. It's tough to like lay all that story groundwork and also be funny.
Right. Right. So all the funny stuff I had already seen. So the pilot just kind of seemed really flat to me. So it's probably a good thing that I didn't I didn't try watching, because
in the second episode he takes a young juggalo under his wing. That's pretty great.
Okay, stop right there. Don't ruin the first pilot. The restaurant gag was already ruined. The rodeo gag where he was actually at the rodeo clown with a bucket full of sparkles and the gramophone playing. For me, and I have to say, okay, right here, a French trained clown performing in a rodeo is how I felt about myself every time I drive to a bar gig.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that is a pretty apt metaphor.
It's absolutely an apt metaphor, and it's the guy who runs the rodeo is every bar booker that I've ever.
Oh, absolutely! I can't believe you didn't ask Zach Galifianakis to eat a soft pretzel in front of everybody to help sell. You know, I never thought of that must have been the way.
If this is your first, if this is your first Rule of Three episode you're listening to, you're going to have to go back and listen to last week's episode.
Is a callback.
We're not going to say anything more about it.
But I wish they would actually do a little bit more of showing him doing the French clowning in the rodeo circuit.
Yeah,
I'm very interested in his like genuine dedication to the clowning.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very Cirque du Soleil sort of. You can see that's kind of how he pictures himself as being a clown at Cirque du Soleil, which there's not an incredible market for in the United States. There's not, most clown work is birthday parties and rodeos.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Now that you put that metaphor idea in my head, I think I'm going to like the show a lot more. But I'll probably wind up weeping while I watch it a couple of times.
Well, you know, I think I know that Louis and probably Zach both and Martha have probably all done the bar gigs.
Oh sure,
Martha and Zach.
Yeah, definitely. I hadn't thought about it, but it is interesting when you go to one of those gigs and you realize that, like, yes, they paid you to do stand-up comedy, but their idea of stand-up comedy is so different from what your idea is that, like, you could be up there doing almost anything and it could actually be closer to what they want. Like, the intellectualism of it is an inherent disqualifier. Like, if you did shadow puppets, but you did shadow puppets with the way they wanted, you could do okay with the shadow puppet routine. You'd be better off with that than, like, you know, have some trenchant observations about the democracy.
yeah, you could improvise shadow puppets. Like, okay, I'm losing this crowd. Okay, I'll do shadow puppets. And then you're going to get off stage, and the club owner's going to be as well. Yeah, some of that stuff was they kind of like, but, you know, well, I lost it when you pulled out, when you started doing the shadow puppets.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You need to do more of that shadow puppet stuff. That's the stuff the crowd wants.
Which, by the way, is exactly how you become Larry the shadow puppet guy.
And it's, I don't know, I haven't seen enough enough episodes, but so far from everything I've seen is Martha's cast has never been explained.
That's a nice detail.
Martha is wearing a cast through the entire show, and it has never even been mentioned. I've never seen. I'm probably about I'd say about a third of the way through all the episodes, and nobody said, why do you have that on? It's just a little. It's like, I think we were talking about Silicon Valley. It's like Big Head's giant drinks.
Yeah, just something in the background for you to
just notice. a little quirk that's just accepted. And if you want to see Martha live. She will be at Crash and Burn next week, April 4th through 8th, Acme Comedy Company, 612-338-6393, acmecomedycompany.com. And while we're giving out web addresses, all the episodes on timslagle.com, iTunes.
Yep, and at brianmillercomedy.com, and I usually put them on my Facebook and pop them up on my Twitter, @realbrianmiller with a Y.
See you next week.
Live
from Acme!
Yes!
Live. We have had people we've worked with on the show before. So you might actually get to meet her on the podcast.
See you next week.